The worst week yet. June 16th to 22nd, 2024. 15-year-old Mississippi girl who stabbed her sleeping mother. Mom was a weird bitch who was suppressing the black in me. I think we can all agree that regardless of your race, creed, religion, or where you live, it's incredibly rude to wake up your mother by stabbing her. What's even more appalling is, rather than calling an ambulance or trying to attend to your mother's wounds, attempting to set the house you share with mom ablaze right after stabbing her. And the most egregious breach of good manners and all known forms of mother-daughter etiquette is to show no remorse upon arrest and brazenly telling police that the woman whose loins birthed you is a weird bitch. The frankly shocking events I describe occurred slightly before last week began, but are worth shoehorning into this week's news since the police didn't announce them until last Monday. According to an attempted murder news release posted on Facebook by the Gulfport Police Department way down yonder in Mississippi, on June 14, 2024, the Gulfport Police Department arrested 15-year-old Lexi Jade Brown and charged her with one count of attempted murder and one count of first-degree arson. At approximately 2:33 a.m. on June 14, 2024, the Gulfport Police Department responded to the 13,000 block of D Avenue in reference to a cutting incident. Upon arrival, officers located a victim suffering from multiple stab wounds. The investigation revealed that the victim was asleep in bed when she awoke to find Brown attacking her with a knife. Brown then attempted to start a fire inside the residence. The victim was transported to a local hospital for treatment. While being questioned by detectives, Brown stated that she'd been planning to kill the victim because she found her to be a weird bitch and accused her of suppressing the black in her. Brown was processed and transported to the Harrison County Adult Detention Center, where she is being held on a $1,250,000 bond set by Judge Patano. Court records say that Lil Ms. Brown's next court date is scheduled for Wednesday. She is not being charged with evidence tampering, so it's not clear exactly why the young lass apparently tried to start a fire after stabbing her mom. Since juveniles over the age of 13 are tried as adults for crimes in Mississippi, we not only get the accused's name, we are also treated to the petulant, impenitent, and facially tattooed youngster's mugshot. Her mother, who was rushed to a hospital and treated for her stab wounds, is apparently still alive and still unidentified. In a journalistic sense, it would help if I could at least see a picture of the victim. Better yet, I'd like to see some video of her talking so that I could cast my judgment as to whether or not this woman was, indeed, a weird bitch. There is no hint of a father being anywhere in the picture. Since the underage mother stabber has apparently confessed, there is no question as to her guilt. The biggest unsolved mystery here is what the defiant, mama-slashing 15-year-old girl meant by saying her mother was suppressing the black in her. Some have speculated that she meant her mother was trying to put a damper on her daughter's dark, demonic, and if you may, evil side. It's possible, but I doubt that's what she meant. The more plausible explanation is that her daughter was a female wigger, a wigress who was attempting to ingratiate herself with local blacks at school, much to her mother's disapproval. Mississippi is truly the most southern state I've been to in all of the negative senses. U.S. News ranks this squalid land of red clay and soul-flattening humidity 48th out of all states based on 71 metrics spanning 8 categories, and that's without even taking into account that on a per capita basis, Ole Miss is the blackest state in the Union. Mississippi's Negro quotient is a terrifying 39%, a full 5 points ahead of its closest competitor, Louisiana. According to one analysis, Mississippi's prison population is 62% black. If tried as an adult and convicted, I'm unsure whether Lexi Jade Brown would be sent to an adult prison, but it's safe to assume that wherever she gets caged, she will be a racial minority. It's also likely that she will wind up regretting she didn't listen to that weird bitch's racist advice. First Coolio, now Fulio, another dead rapper with ridiculous hair. I've previously written about how dangerous it is to be a rapper. And not because rappers exist in a white supremacist society where some cracker asshole is always itching to drag them from behind a truck, or some asshole cop is yearning to kneel on their neck while they slowly die from a fentanyl overdose, but rather because blacks are highly competitive people, and there's always some other aspirant rapper willing to make his bones by shooting you full of lead and then doing a song about it. In 2022, a rapper who called himself Coolio, born artist Leon Ivy Jr., because apparently his dad felt that the world needed more than one artist Leon Ivy, was fortunate enough to escape this veil of tears, not at the trigger-happy hands of a player-hating rapper, but due to an accidental overdose of fentanyl, heroin, and meth. Apart from winning a Grammy for his 1995 song Gangsta's Paradise, Coolio was most notable for a hairdo that made it look as if a half dozen black octopi were attempting to escape from his skull. I never miss an opportunity to tell people that the city of Tampa, Florida was named after the Spanish word for tampon, and they almost always believe me. Now comes word from down Tampa way that Charles Jones, whose rapper name was Fulio, was shot and killed last weekend after being ambushed in the parking lot of a Holiday Inn motel while in the course of celebrating his 26th birthday. Since I am never one to judge, I'll allow you to decide whether Fulio's hair was more ridiculous than Coolio's. The most apt way I could describe Fulio's coiffure is that it looks as if the Island Boy's hair had lost their erections. Believe it or not, I always find these things hard to believe because some noble impulse embedded deeply within my soul refuses to accept that the world has actually become as stupid as it's obviously become. At the time of his death, Fulio had 1 million followers on Instagram and nearly 1 million monthly listeners on the music streaming platform Spotify. He'd been making music since 2015 and was part of a clique of Jacksonville-based rappers who made music about the real-life murders of their competitors, naming names and everything. As Jacksonville's News 4 put it, Jones was known for his popular drill rap videos with controversial lyrics about murders involving rival gangs in Jacksonville. In April, while announcing the release of his album Resurrection, Fulio posted that he'd already weathered multiple attempts on my life. Alas, only 2 months later, he failed to survive what he might have called the multiplest attempt on his life. Someone else, possibly with an even more creative hairstylist, will undoubtedly make a song about it, only to be shot down by another young buck with an IQ of 10 whose woolly mane was carefully sculpted to resemble the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Study: urban-rural political divide is only significant among whites. As I previously stated many times, if there's a way to divide white people, it will be tried, and it will almost always succeed. You can argue about the reasons for this until you are blue, red, or at least no longer white in the face, but it seems like an irrefutable fact. If there were only two white people left on the planet, they'd somehow find a way to go for each other's jugular over the most trifling of differences. Back in March, Taylor and Francis Online published a study titled "A Rural-Urban Political Divide Among Whom? Race, Ethnicity, and Political Behavior Across Place." According to the abstract, over the past 30 years, the United States has developed a rural-urban political divide as rural voters have become increasingly reliable Republican voters, while long-term patterns of Democratic voting in the largest cities have also consolidated in many smaller cities and suburbs as well. Yet, although 1 in 4 rural dwellers now identify as people of color, research on the rural-urban divide is either mostly centered on the behavior and attitudes of non-Hispanic whites, or assumed that non-whites have exhibited similar behavior to whites. Does this political cleavage exist among people of color? We find that the growing rural-urban divide is driven primarily by white Americans, while rural people of color differ much less, if at all, from their urban counterparts in voting behavior and policy attitudes. In addition to highlighting the need for more research on the politics of rural people of color, our findings raise concerns about the political representation of rural Black Americans and Latinos. Naturally, since we can presume most academics these days lean so far to the left, it's a wonder they don't fall off the horizon and plummet into the abyss, the study's authors seem to fret far more about the idea that rural people of color weren't sufficiently represented politically than they were about the fact that colored yokels seem to align with colored urbanites on matters of policy, whereas urban whites and rural whites were at loggerheads with one another politically. On June 7th, the London School of Economics published an article titled, "The Rural-Urban Political Divide is Mostly Driven by White Voters, and There Are Fewer Divisions Over Policy Than Many Think," that parsed the data from the March study, including several helpful graphs. Among its conclusions, in 1970, the share of the population identifying as non-white was a piddling 13% in urban areas and 11% in rural areas. By 2020, the urban share of non-whites had ballooned to 46%. Those identifying as non-white in rural areas had also grown, but to 25%. In the 1972 presidential election, regardless of race, rural voters leaned 65% Republican, whereas urban voters leaned 59% Republican. Not much of a difference at all. But in 2020, rural voters leaned 64% Republican, while Republicans got only 43% of the urban vote. Analyzing voting patterns in presidential elections from 2008 to 2020 found that urban whites leaned Republican by only 53 to 47%, whereas rural whites voted Republican by 64 to 36%. In stark contrast to the urban-rural voting divide among whites, researchers found no statistically significant differences in voting patterns among blacks and Latinos, regardless of where they lived. Last Friday, an analysis of the March study was published on phys.org and titled, "Growing Rural-Urban Divide Exists Only Among White Americans." The study compared black, Latino, and white voters, urban and rural, between 2008 and 2020. Black support for the Democratic Party was very high, around 90% in both rural and urban areas from 2008 to 2020, with support for Republicans consistently very low. Latino support for Democrats remained consistent nationally for this period, with only a few points of variation among both rural and urban voters. White support in urban areas was split almost 50% Democrat, 50% Republican from 2008 to 2020, with a slight Republican edge. It was only among white voters that a large and growing disparity appeared between rural and urban residents, the researchers found. The question needs further study, the researchers said, theorizing that varying degrees of linked fate, a term coined by political scientist Michael Dawson, implying the belief that one's individual fate is tied to that of their racial or ethnic group, can help explain why Black and Latino Americans do not diverge. Ah, there's your answer. Blacks and Latinos share a linked fate. They identify as Black and Latino no matter where they live. In other words, they think in tandem as distinct racial groups. Whites don't think that way. Is this a genetic quirk that only whites have? Or have they systematically been propagandized, shamed, and bullied into splitting hairs over the most trifling matters? Discuss.